APR, possesses 15 years' experience, during which he has counseled C-level executives from Fortune 100 companies to startups in business-to-business, public affairs, and leadership communications. As an author, presenter, and coach on a multitude of communication topics, his insights have appeared in The Strategist, Chris Manager, Wisconsin Law Journal, and numerous other venues. Carl has achieved an accreditation in public relations, APR, certifying a candidate's knowledge of public relations practice, communications, theory, management science, and ethics.
Carl, thanks for joining us today. I'm looking forward to talking about a subject that most attorneys need but don't know about, and that is public relations and how to get their image out there in front of the people that they want to engage them.
Well, thanks, Ed. I appreciate being here. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of my 15 years of experience in the PR game.
So why don't we start by asking you to tell us about something that I think, at least in my world, nobody really has heard of, let alone understand, and that is a shared risk model of working with an outside PR consultant such as yourself.
Absolutely. No longer are we allowed, essentially, to just charge a retainer, get paid with or without results the client finds valuable. I mean, that's the bottom line of the shared risk model. The shared risk model allows agencies to get paid, for example, for the costs of having someone on your account, but it puts the agency's profit margin at risk if they don't deliver on the predetermined value markers.
Well, you say it's no longer allowed. Obviously, or at least I'm assuming, I shouldn't say obviously, but from my understanding, PR agencies are not regulated by any public agencies such as accountants or lawyers and so forth. So when you say allowed, are you talking about market forces not allowing them, or are you talking about something else?
No, I'm absolutely talking about market forces regulating the industry of PR. And, you know, you have plenty of arrangements which have a monthly PR retainer, and quite frequently you get a lot of activity, but the results may or may not be there. So the market forces, I'm seeing a shift in the market forces saying, you know what, if you really want me to sign on the bottom line, I think I need you to put some skin in the game. And this model ensures that all of us have some skin in the game, both on the client side and on the agency side.
Well, that's interesting because I've never heard that before. In my earlier years, when I was looking at this quite seriously, that was my hope. And the response was something to the effect, well, you can't ever predict what you're going to get with advertising or public relations. It's sort of like a snowball effect. One thing builds on another, on another, on another, but you can never really pinpoint and tie any particular, for example, ROI to your investment or your expenditure in PR. And many folks thought literally that it was an expense, not an investment. So tell me, what's driving the demand for this model today?
Well, I think that the ROI is determined prior to you getting out of the gates. So while it would be unethical for me, for example, to promise results, I can tell you here's what the planned results are. And the beauty of this model is it allows clients to say yes more readily because they see, okay, I'm going to pay for what it costs this agency or this consultant to have someone service my account. And here are the predetermined results that we're going to get or at least go for. It's not unethical for me to show a commitment to my clients and say, listen, I'm going to put some skin in the game. I'm going to put my profits at risk. But if I achieve what we agree is valuable to you, then you will pay me the difference.
Are you saying something like, as a PR person, I want a minimum amount of dollars, X dollars, let's say, obviously arbitrarily, let's say $10, but if we together agree that a $100 return is possible and probable, that if you in fact show anything above the $10, that you're going to get a percentage of that difference. Is that what we're talking about?
Sure, sure. And let me give you a little quick example. So let's say we sign a monthly PR retainer of $2,500 a month. Okay, which equates to about 18 hours of dedicated time to your account if we were charging an hourly rate of $135 an hour. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Under this particular shared risk example, the hourly rate would be reduced by 40%. Okay, so you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
This is the shared risk part.
Right.
Your monthly investment or risk becomes $1,500 underneath this agreement. So only after the PR objectives are met that we agree upon going forward that you would find valuable would you pay the remaining $1,000 per month to get to the total of $2,500.
Okay, so you're saying that there's a floor and there's also a cap, but it's based on predetermined goals.
Absolutely, and that's how the ROI is measured. And that's, frankly, what's in it for me and what's in it for the client is we both get on the same page as to what success looks like. And quite frequently, clients either they don't know what it is that they want to do or achieve, and they say, well, I think we need some visibility or we need some positive press, so let's do that. But then after a while, it kind of wears thin, and they think, well, what are we getting for this? Well, did we increase website traffic? Did we produce a number of news releases? They can be qualitative and quantitative measurements of success. So let's say we commit to this amount and we're supposed to write 4 white papers on various subject matter. That could be an achievable goal that's measurable. And if they say, yes, I agree, this is worth $2,500 of my dollars, then we have happy people on both sides of the equation.
That is amazing. I frankly am flabbergasted that PR folks are getting sophisticated enough to be able to understand this. And I think that where you will find this works or where it will break down is in the development of your goals. So how is it that you can work with clients? I mean, describe the process, if you will, of working with clients to help them understand what they should want, because, as you said, what they really want is more publicity, more this, more that. They really haven't thought it through. They haven't put it into measurable terms. So what's the process of you helping them do that?
Well, my process is starting with the business plan and objectives, because if we're not moving in a strategic way, there's no point in doing any of the PR. So if the PR efforts are not connected to very specific business goals and objectives, we're really in a support mode. So let's say corporate law firm that I worked with, they had a number of different business objectives, but we were able to winnow it down to here are the 4 practice areas that we believe are going to have the most potential for growth. So let's support those with PR efforts. So we would take the attorneys from some of those practice areas and create thought leadership campaigns. So we were out there writing bylined articles in the local business journal. We were writing, but they were all very much tied to illustrating what it was that they were out to achieve with their business, not so much just publicity for publicity's sake. That's where the rub is, I think, between most clients and PR counselors.
Okay. In that particular example, you were able to identify 4 practice areas of a multiple of different practice areas that the firm was involved with. Let's take one of those practice areas without naming what it is. But in terms of the process, you know you want to promote this practice area. What is it about that area? What's the process that you would go through to help them be very specific so that you can quantify the objectives and you have the ability to measure whether you've reached the success level or not?
Okay. Let's take, for example, this particular law client developed an HR practice, and they were relaunching it, you know, so they're repackaging an employment law practice and calling it their HR practice. So one measure of success was I told them, I think you need to have an event, bring some people in there that both the media and your clients and prospects would want to attend and learn a little bit more about this HR practice. So being that insurance is a big part of HR and employment issues, we had the state insurance regulator, the head guy, come in and speak, and that was a draw for both media and prospects and clients. So we were able to kill a number of different birds with one stone or one event, so to speak. So we got media coverage. We were able to get prospects and clients out there and identify this particular law firm with HR-related issues. And we were also raising visibility at the state level for these lawyers. So that's one way that we did it. Then We would support the HR practice by getting them out there and looking for editorial calendar opportunities within the local business publications. And we would make sure that we were part of that consideration with the editors and saying, okay, we need to know who are the law firms that we're going to call if we want some expert commentary on HR things. We were out there on a regular basis pitching them new stories that involve these lawyers. So you can see that as the way that we would categorize that is, okay, we're committed to getting you four feature placements in, you know, four of the five publications that cover this area. And if we achieve that goal, then we get paid the difference of the shared risk model.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating. What are some of the things that you would suggest for small firm lawyers to consider in terms of public relations and promotion of their activities? The large firms have people on staff. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. They're always seeking new ideas and avenues for promotion. The smaller firms, however, don't have people on staff. As that kind of a client, what would you recommend that they consider?
Well, I would definitely make sure that I reached out to the reporters in the area that cover their area of expertise or could use their area of expertise. That is a very simple way, not a lot of cost in terms of time because attorneys are always stretched for time, of getting your name out there and associated with, okay, if I need a source on this subject, I'm going to keep this person's name in there. And you might want to send a little email kind of giving your background on why or something that credentializes you as an expert in employment law or litigation, et cetera, and what you're willing to comment on and what you're not able to, so that they have a good sense and they stick it in the file drawer and say, next time I have something, I'm going to contact so-and-so. That's one thing that a small firm can do, an individual practitioner.
Okay. And in today's world, as I hear you saying it, there are a number of agencies that are now moving toward this shared risk model. Are there many? And if so, how is it that the lawyer or the law firm should approach them to discuss this concept?
Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell, this is a model that is only being adopted by a few firms. So this is very, very new. And I would just say that the next time you seek public relations counsel, ask them if they are confident enough in their abilities to share some of the risk with you. And that comment right then and there, or their answer to that question, will dictate whether or not they think they can produce the value that you're looking for.
And it's key, I think, that the agency think that they can produce the value and not just sit there in order to take a check and cash it on a monthly basis.
Right, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest knocks that I run into. And this model, I believe, is a competitive advantage for people like me or whoever's using it, because I think it gets people off of the fence. They're always saying, yeah, we'd like to do that, but we're not quite sure what we're going to get, or we had a bad experience with a PR firm, and all we did was write checks, and we didn't see anything but activity come back on the monthly reports. Well, based on my experience, there are several must-haves when engaging in this type of arrangement. First, you have to have agreed-upon measurements of success. So we are committed to getting you four or five speaking engagements in front of these groups in this particular region. We're committed to writing these number of news releases, getting this number of feature stories placed, whatever it may be. The second factor is you have to have the ability and the willingness to track the responses to the public relations effort. So there's a trust factor there, Ed. You have to have a client who says, okay, we're going to pay you to monitor the local press or pay you to monitor our website traffic, or we're going to do it in-house, which partnering with an in-house marketing person or something, which is fairly frequent in my business, to do some of these things is great, but you have to have that trust factor that they're going to say, okay, we're paying you for performance and we're going to be honest about what's going on in terms of measuring the goals. And then there's also some momentum, and I think you kind of referred to this earlier, that PR is not something that just, okay, we're going to do this one-off thing and hope for, you know, five new clients. It's something that requires about 6 to 12 months, but what this model does is it allows you to kind of offset some of the risk that you're taking with the PR people. And what you also can expect or should expect from a PR person is an easy-to-review dashboard of actions and activities that you commit to every single month, and you say, yes, this is worth my money and my investment in you, and here's what we're going to get for it.
Well, Carl, if I hear you correctly, you're suggesting that there has to be some minimum time commitment to this process in order to allow the PR agency to demonstrate success. Am I correct? Did I hear you correctly?
You did hear me correctly in the sense that these are all, it's right in the word, public relations, and you're building relationships, and that time or the time that it takes to do those things and keep a steady drumbeat of information out there about you takes a little bit of time to get off the ground. That is very true.
So at what point should the lawyer be expecting to see some results?
I would say that what I like to do is move in parallel paths. So we want to move strategically, and we're doing some planning and things like that. But what I found actually helps clients is that you move in another path that says, okay, what are some quick hits that we can get for you in the first 3 months? So 3 months, you should be able to establish the fact that you're representing this particular lawyer or law firm. Here's what we have to offer, and there should be some opportunities for feature coverage or a speaking engagement or a publishing opportunity, whatever it may be, I'd say within the first 3 months. And then you continue to plan and move things very strategically along the way in tandem.
Well, you've opened up a Pandora's box, Carl.
I think I have, and I will get some criticism from my PR colleagues, and that's why I had to say that it would be unethical for me to promise results, because I think much like lawyers, you cannot promise results. But what you can promise is here's what our planned goals and objectives are, and the beauty of this model is that you're sharing in the risk with the client. There's no better way to demonstrate a partnership than to put some skin in the game with your client.
Well, that's true. And when you're a consultant, the other thing that you can do, though not even your model, I think, goes so far as this, and that is to guarantee the results. And you guarantee the results by saying that if I don't perform, if the results do not appear as we believe that they will, then you don't owe me anything. The idea of the shared risk model, I think, is novel for your industry, though obviously not novel, and yet it doesn't go all the way. So there still has to be that element of trust that the lawyer knows that you've performed, however he or she knows that, and that's a whole mystery, because if you're coming together as strangers, you really don't have that trust level. You don't have that experience level. It's not really a question of trust. You just don't have that experience level yet. And so the PR agency could say, if they chose to do so, that, look, you know, we understand your reticence. Let's, you know, give us a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever. You'll pay us X number of dollars. We'll have the shared risk model. And if we don't perform in accordance with X, whether that be 100% of what's promised or 50% of what's promised or however, that we then will refund you your money. So that it's really our risk. And I love your model, but let me put a question to you in this fashion. If the lawyer is not the expert, if the PR person is the expert, shouldn't the entire risk fall on the part of the PR agency?
Well, there is a certain amount of risk in going after PR because there aren't any guarantees. For example, if you want guaranteed messaging out there, then you take out ads. But the difference between advertising and PR, one of the differences, is that advertising raises visibility for your message, but PR raises the credibility or establishes credibility for those messages. So let's say we want to be the leading law firm. Well, that's great, but we're not going to go out there and say, we're the leading law firm. We're going to go out there and we're going to tell stories or pitch stories to the media that illustrate that we're the leading law firm.
I suppose in part this is like the lawyer saying, I cannot guarantee that the jury will come back with a verdict favorable to you. You cannot guarantee that the editors will adopt your pitch or your article on behalf of the lawyer. And so I think the key here, if my suggestion were to be adopted, is creating some measurement that's totally within your control, such as writing white papers or some other tactic that is within your control. Anything outside of your control, and it would probably be unfair to ask you to take the full risk.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair assessment of it. But at the same time, if you look at it, we are taking on risk by saying, okay, you want some feature coverage in the local business journal or on the local television station, and we're willing to put it out there that, yes, we have a discounted rate, 40% off of the hourly rate, and if we do achieve that, then, you know, that will be valuable to you, and you will pay for that. So there is a certain amount of risk being taken on by the PR person without any guarantees, for sure.
Well, Carl, I want to thank you for joining us today and talking about the risk that each party takes or should take when trying to promote the activities and the awareness and the credibility of the lawyer to help him or her increase their practice. Again, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Ed. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.